Hey, everybody, this is Bob Goodman, and welcome to another episode of Career Club Live. This week's episode is sponsored by our newest offering that we call Next Placement, which is our innovation in the outplacement category, where we're taking a more people-centric, empathetic approach to caring for the whole person, not just a cell on a spreadsheet who might have found themselves caught up in an organizational restructure. So if your company is looking at any type of a reorg or any type of offboarding of associates, we'd love for you to come take a look at Next Placement, our disruption in the category of outplacement. This is also being streamed on YouTube, so we would always encourage you to add comments if you'd like, but please like and subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. So with that, I would love to introduce our guest today, and I'm going to read this because her credentials are pretty amazing. So today's guest is Julia Pollack, and Julia is the chief economist at ZipRecruiter, which everybody's familiar with, the leading online employment marketplace that uses AI-driven smart matching technology to connect millions of businesses and job seekers. She uses data from the ZipRecruiter marketplace to measure the health of the labor market, identify hiring trends, and help employers and job seekers prepare for the future of work. And we're going to talk a lot about that stuff in our conversation here in a minute. Her research is frequently cited in leading national outlets like the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and NPR. She's also contributed to Barron's and a member of the Forbes Human Resources Council. And with that, Julia, welcome.
Thank you so much, Bob. I'm really happy to be here.
No, it's good. And I'm glad that we can kind of be the capstone on top of all those other media credentials. So way to go. So it's great to have you on. Thank you so much.
Great. There are lots of distractions here in Las Vegas where I am for a conference, but yes. I ran up through the casino back to my room.
Hopefully you didn't lose any money on the way.
I definitely did not.
So let's go ahead and get started. As is our want, we love to ask just a couple of icebreaker questions and just help people get to know you a little bit. So we'll start with something really easy. Where were you born and raised?
I was born and raised in Cape Town, South Africa, and stayed there through the end of high school. Took an internship right after, but applied to study in the U.S. My mother, who was on the board of two universities in Cape Town, said that she saw the country moving in the wrong direction, too much political interference in the universities. And she said she wanted me to sort of aim high and reach for the stars and apply to Oxford and Harvard and whatever. So I ended up coming to the United States to study at Harvard and fell in love with the country and stayed.
Well, awesome. So you anticipated our second question, which is where you go to school. So well done. Did I see on your background, though, you also have an advanced degree?
Yes. So after my undergrad in economics at Harvard, I went to the Pardee Rand Graduate School's doctoral program in policy analysis, which is basically like an applied economics degree, where we also did client work, policy analysis work for major clients ranging from the health and human services department to the defense department and to private sector businesses.
Oh, very cool. And so maybe that's kind of the lead into the next question, which is, do you mind just sort of briefly painting a little bit of a picture of your career arc after school?
Yeah. Sure. So I started off interested in economics and labor issues, primarily coming from South Africa, which had, a plus 30% unemployment rate always. And it was just a very salient human tragedy as you travel through the country. Then at RAND, right after college, my first job was actually as a policy research assistant for national security policy. I applied for the economic research assistant role and for the national sort of defense one, and ended up getting the defense one. And the defense policy role was also really interesting to me because I think I came to the United States at a time when the Iraq War and Afghanistan War were sort of the major issues. And I spent a lot of time studying military issues. But what I found studying defense was that I think like most issues, they end up coming back to manpower issues, to recruitment and retention. An army very much marches on its stomach. And before you get to strategy and policy, you really have to work on training, recruitment, retention, et cetera. And so at RAND, I ended up moving back into manpower and labor-related topics. I taught economics at Pepperdine after that for about a year and a half before one day I wasn't looking for a job. I was actually quite happy raising my young kids and teaching as an adjunct while also doing some policy work at RAND. But I heard a ZipRecruiter ad on the radio, and I ended up going on and just exploring, you know, discovering what jobs lay out there for economists. And there had just been a job posted for an economist at ZipRecruiter, you know, on ZipRecruiter. And their office happened to be a 6-block walk from my home. So there was, you know, it couldn't have been a more convenient role. And I applied for that.
That sounds like a match made in heaven. Now, you anticipate the next question. Tell me just a little bit about your family.
Sure. So I have 3 kids, an 11-year-old girl, a 7-year-old boy, and an almost 2-year-old girl. Mm. My daughter is extremely musical, and there's nothing more exciting than watching her just shred it on the guitar. My son is a baseball fanatic, and you know, I've turned into the parents I made fun of in the stands, jumping up and down and rooting like a maniac. we live in sunny Los Angeles near the ocean, and wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
Sounds awesome. So again, you're doing such a good job of just sort of leading me down the path. So when you're not doing wonky chief economist ZipRecruiter stuff, what do you guys do for fun? I assume it's got a lot of kid orientation to it.
Definitely. Going to the beach, hikes. We live in a neighborhood with amazing hiking trails, playing music with the kids. So lots of jam sessions on guitars, violins. I play the cello and piano.
Awesome.
I'm the nerdy parent who does all the classical music stuff with the kids. My husband is the cool parent who takes out the guitar and the bass and the amplifiers and rocks out with them. And then my absolute favorite activity in the whole world is reading children's books to my kids. I read to them all day, every day, basically, when I'm not at work. I think there's just nothing better than Roald Dahl and Astrid Lindgren. And, you know, I can read and reread those all day long.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. That was fun. I learned a lot, and that was very cool. So let's kind of get into the meat of the conversation. Just sort of broadly, can you describe for folks what your role is exactly? What does the chief economist at ZipRecruiter do?
Sure. I mean, so I have 2 main responsibilities. One is to explore ZipRecruiter data and see what it says about labor market trends. You know, a lot of the national data that we get is mixed. Some of it is delayed. And it's also very high level, right? There's no such thing as the labor market. There are millions of little labor markets that can be very, very, very different in terms of the number of employers, the number of candidates, the skill and quality of the candidates, et cetera, et cetera. So I look at occupations and locations around the country and see where there are mismatches between what employers want and what job seekers want, and then ways that our product can help bring them together. That's our real goal, is to connect job seekers and employers quickly and make them all better off. So one job is to digest our data and find ways that job seekers and employers can succeed in the marketplace and communicate those insights through the media, through our own reports. And then the other is to develop actionable insights reports for mainly enterprise customers. And one day we hope to, you know, roll those out to everybody as well.
Oh, that's very, very fun. I mean, doesn't sound like you have a shortage of things to be focused on and continue to clip along. You know, it's very dynamic.
It's very dynamic, and the labor market keeps changing. And of course, the last 3 years have been more dynamic, more volatile, more crazy and unpredictable than ever before.
So this may not be a totally fair way of framing this out. So if this doesn't work for you, you can correct this. But if you could sort of, for listeners, because our audience will be a lot of HR professionals, business owners, as well as the candidate, the talent side of the equation. So could you set the stage of just sort of where the current labor market is based on the data that you guys are looking at? And I'm thinking about things like Fed policy, inflation, unemployment rates, you know, job openings that aren't being filled. And I'm sure there's a million other attributes how you might frame it up, but those are maybe 4 that pop in my head.
Sure. I mean, so, you know, we had this unprecedented recession in 2020 where companies did something many of them have never, ever done before. I mean, you talk to major hospitality groups and they laid off all 20,000 staff overnight in March, right? Then over the course of 2021 and 2022, they had to hire them all back because business resumed much more quickly than they'd anticipated. And now you have a strange moment in the labor market where businesses like restaurants and hotels and airlines are continuing to do a roaring trade and are continuing to recover and restaff and hire like mad and are continuing to experience sort of acute labor shortages. But other parts of the economy where companies expanded headcount, you know, sometimes 50%, like in tech, in many warehousing companies, in mortgage lending companies, those companies expanded because of a once in a lifetime unsustainable set of factors, you know, zero interest rates, every American wanting to sort of start becoming a retail stock trader, everyone wanting to refinance their home all at once, everyone being stuck on their computers and their phones with nothing else to do. And there you're seeing a pullback and a total change in conditions, mean reversion, whiplash, whatever you want to call it. So it's a very strange market right now where I think all the signs are mixed because the experience is very different depending on where you stand.
Well, I think you make such a great point around there is not a labor market. There are different fragments of it that have their own unique qualities with it. Now, having said that, you know, one of the things that I'd love to hear you talk about is employer sentiment. And, you know, in some cases, it would seem that, you know, particularly like with tech companies, whether they're really big ones or ones that were awash in cash because VC money was, you know, the most it had ever been deployed. And then that just completely turned off, right? But then you've got other CEOs that are looking at, you know, you on CNBC and other people are going like, hey, I don't want to be like losing in, you know, the last chair, you know, and like, hey, I was the only one that didn't like cut staff because, you know, I failed to anticipate the recession and things were going to get tougher. And now I'm losing in musical chairs. What's sort of your feeling on employer sentiment? And again, if there's multiple flavors of that, identify them.
Right. So I think it's very mixed at the moment. There are companies, especially in sort of business to business services, companies related to tech that are seeing a steep pullback in advertising spend, in subscriptions, et cetera, and that are feeling nervous, that are cautious, that are trying to go from offering growth for years and years to offering profitability, that are sort of following Mark Zuckerberg's year of efficiency march. And then there are others that don't know what everyone's talking about, that see just blockbuster record-breaking numbers, sales, you know, continuing to go through the roof, huge numbers of summer bookings, for example, for vacations. And they see no sign of recession in their books at all. And yet they read the news, they watch the headlines, exactly. They turn on the TV, and they are very concerned. They don't want to overexpand headed into a downturn. They don't want to be foolish. And so I think those employers would be hiring much more right now were it not for the fact that the Fed had raised interest rates and were it not for the fact that the Fed was communicating that they may continue to do so for goodness knows how long. So that profound degree of business uncertainty is causing businesses to take a wait and see approach, to pause major investments, to hold off on opening a second location, to hold off on taking a loan to get a massive piece of new equipment. And that means they're not hiring for that new equipment in that new location either. I think the minute we're confident that inflation has come down, the minute the Fed hits the pause button, those employers will finally feel confident again, and you'll see sort of this pent-up demand for talent unleashed in the market.
Yes, yeah, and I pray that you're right, and because some of this is self-inflicted, is right, but it seems to be under our control, right? And so when the Fed kind of finishes what they're going to do on monetary policy, and people go, okay, now I know what the next X months, you know, few quarters likely looks like. Now I can make a decision with more confidence.
Yes.
And deploy capital in different areas with a bit more confidence. Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense. Geographically, size of company, so some of the ways that you might slice the data. Hospitality is an easy one, and you kind of talked about that.
Right.
What are some other sectors that feel either more like they're going to be the beneficiaries of this, or they might are suffering a little bit more while we're in this uncertainty?
Well, you know, all of the industries, I think, that that are still down in terms of overall employment, where employment levels are below what they were before the pandemic, still have a lot of recovering and catching up to do. The government is finally adding lots of people to payrolls now in schools and in government departments. They, of course, were sort of flat-footed in 2021 and 2022, when the private sector was much more flexible and nimble, was much more able to offer remote work, to offer individuals specific negotiated bonuses. They weren't bound by collective bargaining agreements to the same degree, or by pay scales, or by those kinds of constraints. And so they could surge ahead and recover more quickly. But finally, now with labor force participation continuing to recover, and with some private sector players pulling back, we are seeing the government recover, public sector hiring pick up. We're also seeing nursing homes and child daycare services and all of those struggling sort of laggards in the post-COVID recovery finally start to make some gains. But we're continuing to see strong numbers in leisure hospitality, in tourism, and in personal care services. So there are lots of areas of sort of growth and there are lots of bright spots in the economy right now.
So and maybe this is a little bit of a head fake here, but layoffs are in the news. We've talked about that here just a little bit, right? Tech clearly has underwritten a lot of the layoff news, but your data I think suggests that maybe this isn't quite as prevalent as the big point, bold headlines of like you would think that everybody's laying off tons of employees. Does the data support that?
So we don't capture data on layoffs. We capture data on hiring and job postings. And but if you look at overall national data, what you see is that the main reason that job growth has declined is because of a decline in hiring and job postings, more than due to an uptick in layoffs. So layoffs in the Bureau of Labor Statistics' data, in jobless claims, are still pretty low. They have ticked up in recent months, particularly in information. So, and in financial services, there are some places where layoffs now are above their pre-COVID average levels. But overall, in most of the economy, layoffs are still vanishingly rare. And the lowest number of layoffs and discharges, layoffs and firings that ever took place in a month in 20 years of data collected by the Labor Department was 1.6 million before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And after the pandemic in 2021, 2022, we routinely had month upon month upon month of only 1.3 to 1.4 million layoffs taking place. Mm-hmm. Extremely unusually low numbers. And when you talk to real companies, what they say that meant was that they weren't firing people even for cause. They had changed their standards and rules from a sort of one strike you're out policy if you show up late for work or show up drunk to a 10 strikes you're out policy because they were just so terrified of having to replace people and it was so expensive to do so.
Well, okay, so thank you. That's a great transition point on retention. And I know that you speak about this some, but what do you advise your employer? You talk about your enterprise clients. What's ZipRecruiter's advice to employers from a retention strategy perspective? What are maybe three things that companies should be doing?
Well, the first thing I do is to point out the data, which is that layoffs are still, employee quits are still very, very elevated. They're still way above average and a much larger share of all turnover than they were before, when employers called more of the shots and decided when people stayed, you know, went and when they stayed. So that's the backdrop. The backdrop is, you're losing the people that you most want, and you're only able to retain people who in other circumstances would be fired. And this is a very, very tricky situation. And it's showing up in the data in terms of a decline in customer experience and customer satisfaction surveys across the economy. So this is having a real business impact. What are some ways to recruit and retain workers? Well, one thing we find in our surveys is that workers are all different. And so we can't give one-size-fits-all solutions to anybody. The most important thing you can do really is to survey your workers. Find out which benefits and perks are most valuable to them. And you know, optimize your offerings for the workers that you have, that you most want to retain, and the workers you most want to attract.
Do you see any of that, and if you guys don't have the data, that's cool, but do you have any visibility into how that might vary generationally? So
absolutely, yes. So we run a quarterly job seeker confidence index survey where we ask job seekers lots of questions about what they're interested in. And there's very wide variation across generations. Older workers, of course, tend to care much more about retirement benefits and health insurance. Young workers often, workers in the middle, you see a sort of surprisingly large effect of fertility benefits and pet insurance. Mm-hmm. Younger workers like earned wage access. They don't like overdraft charges. They're living paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. So companies understanding what the main pain points are, the sort of challenges of daily life that their employees face are, and finding ways to use their size in the market, their ability to negotiate, you know, favorable rates and provide access to sort of tools and platforms, if they can sort of leverage that size and might, they can often offer employees things that are tremendously valuable to them that are not that costly to the employer.
It's funny, I think it was just this week I was reading an article about kind of the flip side of tuition reimbursement, which is student loan repayment, and actually providing a stipend specifically for that purpose, to help people that are, struggling under $80,000 or whatever of student loan debt, and the company, basically helping them, and it's such a big source of stress.
Like, right.
Is that something you've seen?
Absolutely. So student loans are hugely salient. We just did a survey of this year's graduating class, of the class of 2023. The majority of those students are graduating with student loans, and they are worried about making those payments, and they're planning to change their lives and their job search priorities to deal with it. So there are a number of ways that employers can help. One is just to offer a sort of planning tool, a way to immediately send part of your paycheck to cover your student loans, with no match from the employer, with no water off the employer's back at all. Yeah. The other way is to offer some kind of match. So it's like a 401k match, where the employee pays in and you offer them something in addition. And then there are other kinds of ways to do it with, outright sort of checks with student loan assistance checks. So there are lots and lots of ways to do all of these things. And sometimes it requires sort of a little bit of testing to see what your employees really value and what's enough, right? Yes. Of course, this is an environment where companies want to be prudent stewards of investor money and feel as though in many cases they've done as much as they can, right? There were these huge wage increases during the pandemic, many out-of-cycle wage increases. Businesses are feeling as though they're stretched to the max at this point. And so now's the time to be creative and see, where the sweet spot is